Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
It's Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Storylines Midwest is a many-parted show where we try to look at our lives and the way we think about our lives through our literature. Some of the things we've been talking about today will come up in some of the other books we'll talk about. For instance, the issues of racism will come up in Richard Wright's Native Son. A whole different kind of controversy will be with us when we talk about Jane Smiley's Thousand Acres. And the author will be with us, too. But today, we're still talking about Huckleberry Finn.
Yes, we are. And as David Anderson was saying in the first half of this program, you know, this is a book that appeals to readers of every age. And I think it is that sense of freedom, that sense of escape, of being on the raft in the river, beholden to no one, that I think appeals to all of us.
Yeah, and there's that lovely sort of thing that David was saying, that Midwestern literature and American literature may be more about movement than about place. I mean, it's a very different sense than we sometimes get or sometimes talk about here in the Midwest. Certainly, the river is the central place in Huckleberry Finn, and it is the place of refuge. It's the place that Huck and Jim feel safe.
And we have another excerpt from The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, with Huck and Jim escaping from one of their many close calls.
I never felt easy till the raft was 2 miles below there and out in the middle of the Mississippi. Then we hung up our signal lantern and judged that we was free and safe once more. I hadn't had a bite to eat since yesterday, so Jim, he got out some corn dodgers and buttermilk and pork and cabbage and greens. There ain't nothing in the world so good when it's cooked right. And whilst I ate my supper, we talked and had a good time. I was powerful glad to get away from the feuds, and so was Jim to get away from the swamp. We said there weren't no home like a raft. After all, other places do seem so cramped up and smothery, but a raft don't. You feel mighty free and easy and comfortable on a raft.
We've talked a little bit about the controversy surrounding Huck Finn, but I think when we look at the book at its most basic, it's a story of two young men traveling down the Mississippi on a raft. They're fishing, swimming, smoking. They're responsible only for themselves. And I think that's an idea of freedom that can appeal to absolutely anyone. We've probably all had a few days when leaving everything behind, floating down the Mississippi River, seemed very tempting. So if you've ever felt the pull of the Mississippi, join us now at 866-255-2762. That number again, 866-255-2762.
Last summer, two young men from Holland, Michigan, decided to recreate Huck and Jim's journey down the Mississippi. Ethan Van Drunen and Ben Dornbos built a raft and traveled on it from Hannibal, Missouri to New Orleans. How I envy them. Ethan and Ben, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Ben, I want to start with you. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I just was reading the book when I got home for my first time after a year of college,
And I called up Ethan and I said, we have to do this. It was just that passage that you just read there about how it, other places seem cramped up but not the raft. I mean, that just really hit my heart, and I was like, yeah, we have to do this.
So that was the first time you read the book?
Yeah. Yep.
Great. Ethan, were you easy to convince?
Yeah, I told him right then that that's what we would do, and that was the end of it. We didn't really even have to talk much more about how we were going to do it. It was how, you know, just we were going to do it right from then.
Ethan, had you read the book before?
I had. I'd read it a couple times, two times, I think, and twice since then, too.
So tell us about your raft. Where'd your raft come from? How'd you make it?
Well, I told my dad about the adventure, about what we wanted to do, and I woke up early one morning to go to my job at a local bakery I work at, and sure enough, taped to my mirror is an ad in the paper for a $300 pontoon boat from 1947, all steel hulls, and I called the number up, and he said, yeah, it's a piece of junk, and we said, all right, that's what we're looking for, so we got it, and we stripped everything down, and we just had the steel hulls, and then Ethan's dad had some scrap wood for us, and we just built on top of it.
How bad a piece of junk was it?
It was a piece of junk. It had holes in it that we didn't know about it when we built it, and it didn't have one of the holes, but we were checking it for pressure, and we blew it up. And so then we had to do a little bit of, well, we learned how to do some bondoing work and things like that, but yep.
And so how long did all that work on the raft take?
We got it in May, wasn't that right, Ethan?
Yeah, I think we got it in May, and we left in late June, so it took that long.
Yeah. Where'd you put in?
Hannibal.
And right in the town?
Actually, yeah. Ethan, you want to tell them that story?
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful story. We arrive in Hannibal on the 4th of July. It was the 4th of July, and we had trailered it to get down there, just, you know, like, just floating in the wind like that, and because we had a canopy on us over top for to get out of the sun. Uh-huh. And we're coming into town, and it's the 4th of July, and they're having a parade. And so we just joined up with the parade. And when we were going down Main Street in Hannibal, past, you know, Mark Twain's home and all that, and we were in the parade and just sitting in our hammocks, and people were just cheering for us. And then as we went over the hill, we saw the Mississippi River below, and it was just
that was the
beautiful.
First time.
Wow.
And that, yeah, that it wasn't only a parade, but it was also the Tom Sawyer festival in town. So it was like everything was decorated and, you know, Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn things. So
wow.
It was just like, it was really surreal, actually.
So you put in on the 4th of July or thereabouts. How long did it take you to make the whole journey down to New Orleans?
A month and a half. Yep. We ended, well, I had to be back for school in August, and we got off the river, and I had about 3 or 4 days to pack my things and get ready for school.
What did you do with the raft in New Orleans?
Well, we met a really nice family in northern Louisiana who took us into their house, and they had a kid who was going to graduate. He was going to graduate high school this year, and we took him out on a little ride on the raft, and he just said, we have to do this. And he had read Huckleberry Finn, too, and so we sold them the raft for $300, and they picked it up from us in New Orleans.
Good deal.
And were they going to head on south from New Orleans, or were they going to go back?
No, they're going to start in Hannibal next year, so the same raft is going to go down the same river, same route.
Wow, good.
Yeah.
So you met them, and did you meet a lot of people along the way? Did you talk to a lot of people?
Yeah,
we met some great people along the way. I mean, just the people that we met were so amazing, because they wouldn't meet us for more than like a minute or two, and then they'd say, well, where are you staying tonight, or what are you eating for dinner, and that sort of thing. And
yeah,
they would just, it was really, really nice. The hospitality that we met was beyond expectation, that's for sure.
That's great.
So you were on the raft a lot, though, obviously, not just in people's homes. What was it like every day on the raft?
We wake up in the morning, usually on a sandbar. Sometimes we'd see through the fog a towboat coming through, and they might see our boat, and the captain would be sitting out there with his binoculars, and they'd honk the foghorn at us, and that would, you know, wake us up, and we'd get out and stretch and push our raft off into the river after we took down our tent and just floated and listened to the water, watched the birds, read, laid in the hammocks.
Did you fish?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we fished a bit. We learned how to become quite the good catfish fisherman.
Did you eat it?
Yeah, we ate some of the catfish. I think we were a little bit leery of the catfish, but we ate a few of them.
And, yeah, and did you actually recreate the whole Huck and Jim thing, laying there on the raft, sunning yourselves?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, that's a funny story. There, you mentioned Huck and Jim laying on the raft, sunning themselves. We were doing that one time, and in the book it mentions naked that they were doing that,
uh-huh.
And Ben has the scars to prove it, that that a fishing boat came up alongside and surprised us, and we have, as our cooking stove, we had the inside of a washing machine tube.
For a fire pit.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had the sand in the bottom, and the fire was in there, and so it was very hot, and when he got up trying to find his shorts, he went and burned his leg. It was...
Yeah, but the ordeal.
You must have gotten a lot of looks laying on your raft naked.
Well, there wasn't anybody to look at us.
Until the fishing boat came up.
Yeah, that was the thing. The river really felt like, it was ours or we were its, either way you want to look at it. But it was just...
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was just us in the river except for the occasional barge once in a while below St. Louis. Above St. Louis is recreational, boats and things. But below it, nobody. And we heard all these horror stories that said, oh, you can't raft down the Mississippi River. That's not possible. It's just not possible. Wait till you get below St. Louis. Well, below St. Louis, it was really peaceful.
Huh. Were you ever in any danger? Was there anything dangerous that happened?
Yeah. we had a 25-horsepower motor, and above St. Louis, we had 5 locks to go before we got below St. Louis where there's no more locks.
Oh.
And we didn't use the motor ever because we didn't want to, but we needed use the motor to get through a lock. So I try to start it up, and, sure enough, it's not working. And Ethan's on the radio calling them and saying, we're having problems here. Our motor's not starting. Could somebody help us? And nobody was around. And, well, we looked over the dam, and we said, well, it's not so much of a drop. So we just shot right over the dam.
Whoa.
And it was only a few-foot drop. And we talked to some people, and they said we were only the second people in history they've ever heard of that have done that.
And all your stuff stayed on the raft and everything?
I don't think so. We didn't know what was all lost, but there was definitely some things. We'd say, hey, have you seen my this? No. Have you seen my that? No. The natural place for things seem to be in the water. They just kind of gravitate there.
Yeah, we lost a lot of stuff overboard just various times, like going through the dam one time, but Ben mentioned the other group of kids who went through there, the dam, the time before us, and they were actually a group of Japanese kids, and they had read Huckleberry
wow.
Finn, and then they decided that they would just come over and build their raft in Hannibal and then float down.
Yeah.
And they weren't even aware that you were supposed to use the locks. They just shot the dam by themselves because they had never heard of the locking, custom.
Oh, dear. You're listening to Storylines Midwest, and the number to call to join our conversation is 866-255-2762. We're talking with Enid Van Drunen and Ben Doornbos about their adventure last summer traveling down the Mississippi River on a homemade raft. And we would love to hear from you if you have Mississippi adventure stories or fond memories of the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, or if you've lived along the Mississippi your entire life and have some things you want to share about the draw of the river. We'd love to hear from you. 866-255-2762. And Diana is on the line from Ann Arbor. Hello, Diana.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm loving your show.
Great.
Thanks.
This very last summer, we were joining my son, who is going down the Mississippi
uh-huh.
on a houseboat that he and some friends have rebuilt from what people considered garbage. And so your story sounds very familiar to me. He started in Milwaukee on a pontoon raft and got as far as Dubuque because he only put in October a year ago. So the weather closed in on him, and he had to keep his boat over winter, and then they rebuilt this garbage houseboat and pushed the raft with the houseboat. So it was sort of a miniature version of the barges with the with the tugboats, except his was, as my husband likes to put it, a floating 50-foot slum. But they're having the time of their lives, and we did too. We got to be with them for a week between Quincy, just north of Hannibal.
Yeah.
And the convergence of the Illinois and the Mississippi, which is just north of St. Louis.
So they're still there now? They're still doing it?
Well, they're still doing it. They were going to try and do what Huck Finn and Jim didn't do and go up the Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully get then to the Tennessee. And, you know, my son would really like to just kind of do this for a few years. And so he wants to just kind of explore this Midwest network of rivers.
Right. Wow. What an adventure.
Has the book been an inspiration to him?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of funny. We read it earlier with him and his sister when they were younger and were, you know, they were charmed by it. And then it, of course, resurfaced years later. And now we're reading it again with children that are 10 and 12, so we may be fostering yet another adventure or two.
Oh, Diana, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Carol is also on the line at 866-255-2762. Hello, Carol.
Hi.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great.
And I see that you took a trip down the Mississippi.
Yeah, this was a long time ago. I'm 45, and this is when I was like 19, 20. I was with my ex at the time. But we did something a little bit different. We had started down the Ohio River at Pomeroy, Ohio, in a little sail canoe, a 17-foot Old Town sail canoe. And we went down the Ohio River and the Mississippi and then the Intercoastal. We ended up in Honduras.
Wow.
But we did read the books on the way down, and it really does inspire you.
Was that your original inspiration?
Yeah, kind of. But really, we wanted to get to Central America, and we thought, well, you know, how can we get there? And through the evolution of, well, gee, if, you know, we could drive or we could, well, we got these rivers. Why don't we just go that way?
Wow. What did it look like when you came out of the Ohio and of the Mississippi? What did that look like?
You know, I guess, I don't know, like two rivers coming together, really. You know, it just all of a sudden bigger. And but people were, like, extraordinarily nice. They hear you on the river, they'll cash your checks without ID, you know, they take you into their homes, feed you. A guy in Carroll, Illinois gave us a lawyer, he said, I'd let you sleep in my office tonight, but I got some clients coming in. He gave us the keys to his car.
Wow.
And let us go out for the night.
Great.
We returned his car and we left the keys and left him a note, thanks.
That's great.
Does that strike you as something that could only happen in the Midwest?
You know, it's kind of funny because we met some people. Like, we met a guy who used a bathtub to melt lead to pour a keel to make his own small sailboat. He went down the Mississippi. He didn't know there was dikes. He never got charts or anything. And he found out when he got hung up on one. But, you know, I guess it's just that whole, you know, Huck Finn dream. You know, you just think, okay, I'm gonna do this. You know, they did it, I can do it.
Right. Ethan and Ben, you're not alone. See, there's everybody else is doing it too.
Yeah, that's great.
And they do. They think you're crazy. The Coast Guard said that they had the right to pull us off the water because, you know, if we had an unsafe craft, they had the right to pull us off the water. And I'm thinking, we're not unsafe. And, you know, all the towboats had to have known. They have to, you know, they got radios. They have to know who's going up and down the rivers.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And if you don't watch, like, you know, a couple times we just not paying attention, reading, and just floating on. We went late in the year.
Yeah.
And you get a sunny day and you think, okay, we're just going to float. And they sneak up on you, boy. Then they blow their horns and you paddle quick to get out of the way. We didn't have a motor or anything.
Wow.
Oh, Carol, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. And we have Lida on the line at 866-255-2762 from Iowa City. Did I say your name correctly? Oopsie, I think we lost her. Well, if you get a chance, give us a call back. 866-255-2762 is the number to call. It seems like a lot of people have felt the pull of the Mississippi River.
I'm ready to go now.
And if you've ever felt that draw, we do want to hear from you with your stories. And if you have any questions for Ethan and Ben about their trip down the Mississippi as well, we'd love to hear it. Guys, what kind of a reaction or what kind of an opinion did the people that you talked to have of the Mississippi River? How did they feel about it?
Scared.
They're terrified. They're terrified of the river.
It's amazing.
It is. I mean, you go past this city, it's a fairly large city, and there will be no one even remotely close to the river, not even people with houses next to the river because of the flooding. That's why it's wilderness looking all the way down up until you get to Baton Rouge. It's just wilderness. It's beautiful. And no one goes there to experience it because for some reason they're just afraid of it. There's all these lures about how you're going to get sucked under, or we heard that there's these cedars that, you know, shoot up out of the ground or something. They don't understand that the river's just peaceful, and if you just kind of let the river take you instead of trying to take the river, it really is very easy and a good way of life.
Of course, anybody who lost all of their belongings in the flood of 1993 or many of the other floods, I guess, do have a very good reason to be afraid of the river.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Charity's from Iowa. She can only think of that flood.
I tell you what, if you say the year 1993, that's the first thing that comes to anybody's mind from Illinois or from Iowa, from Missouri, anyone who lives anywhere close to the river. That was an incredible sight. And Eric in Hastings, Minnesota, grew up on the Mississippi. There we go. Hello, Eric.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're
good,
well.
How are you?
Great. I was just listening to the broadcast, and I just kind of got this warm, fuzzy feeling.
All right.
I haven't been up there, actually, I was up there this weekend, but I haven't been on the river in quite a while. But as a boy, I grew up there, and it's just a magnificent area. And
we all think of the river as being a mile wide, but up by you, it wouldn't be that big, would it?
It's actually, where I lived was right above the Lock and Dam in Hastings, and it was roughly about a mile wide there also.
Oh, okay.
So, but what we used to hang out there and go fishing and camp out on the weekends on the sandbars, and got some pretty good stories, you know?
That's great.
Brings back a lot of memories.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, thanks for calling and sharing a few of them with us here today, Eric. 866-255-2762 is the number to call, and Tom is on the line in Wixom. Hello, Tom.
Yes. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I wanted to comment on the idea of floating down the river that Huck Finn glorified being when it was more controversial, that it would encourage people to do things like that, and part of the reasoning for banning it would be to discourage it.
And do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, Tom?
Oh, a bad thing.
To ban it.
It sounds like fun to go down the river.
Yeah, I think Ethan and Ben would say so.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Do you think that it was part of the rationalization to discourage that book, being that they don't want people to do things like that?
I what do you think, Ethan? I don't know. That doesn't seem like one of the things I've heard, but maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. You never know with people.
Well, I suppose what we were hearing earlier in the program, David Anderson talking about how a lot of elementary, junior high school teachers don't want to teach the book, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, because he smokes.
Right.
So probably a lot of parents didn't want their kids to read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn because they didn't want them
to
building rafts and
floating
down any river or creek nearby.
Yeah. You guys aren't very old. How'd your parents treat you doing that?
Oh, they were all for it.
Were they?
Yeah. I just mentioned the idea to my dad once, and he said, yeah, that's great. And like I said, I woke up in the morning, and he was the one who had posted the ad for the pontoon on my mirror. And he had also mapped out some of the river routes, and he was just like, this is definitely possible. You guys can do this.
Right. Guys, what do you think you learned on the trip?
I think we would both say that we really studied the word freedom. We were really interested in that because that was kind of the common theme of the book for us. You know, what is the meaning of freedom? And you know, that's a really in-depth thing that would take a long time to explain. But I think, you know, we learned a lot about freedom and how it relates to control, and that we felt free because we did not try to control the river, but we let it take us, you know? So that was something I think we learned.
Yeah, you float down every day and you just follow the river and just kind of sit on the raft and let it take you to whoever's you're gonna meet. And just that's the way life is for us now, too. Coming back, you just have the trust that everything is going to work out all right, and you just let life come to you, and that's what the river was for us.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Ethan Van Drunen and Ben Doornbos, who recreated the adventure of Huckleberry Finn and Jim as they went down the Mississippi on their homemade raft this past summer. This is Storylines Midwest.
Everybody knows it's a mighty big river. Flows from Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. Drinks the Alleghenies and the mighty Rocky Mountains. Everybody knows how the Mississippi rolls from northern Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. And I know that the river has a rhythm. I know, like an Indian drum. And I know that the rhythm of the river, it's a rhythm of life, it's a rhythm of man. The mighty Mississippi is the heartbeat of the land. Everybody knows the springtime on the river is near to heaven as a boy can be. Then come the floods, ripping like the devil, looking for Huck, Tom, Sawyer, and me. Like Injun Joe, it's mean as it can be. And I know that the river has a rhythm. I know.
Music from the show Mark Twain and the Laughing River by Jim Post.
Lots of artists, lots of people, as we've been talking about today, have their memories of the river. Here's a little passage I found when I was looking at Ernest Hemingway's Nick Adams stories. It's a book we're going to be talking about later this year on Storylines Midwest. And here's the passage where Hemingway's Nick Adams first sees the Mississippi. The scenery seemed to flow past in a stream of road, telephone poles, occasional houses, and flat brown fields. Nick had expected bluffs for the Mississippi shore, but finally, after an endless seeming bayou had poured past the window, he could see out of the window the engine of the train curving out onto a long bridge above a broad, muddy brown stretch of water. Desolate hills were on the far side that Nick could now see, and on the near side, a flat mud bank. The river seemed to move solidly downstream, not to flow but to move like a solid shifting lake, swirling a little where the abutments of the bridge jutted out. Mark Twain, Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, and LaSalle crowded each other in Nick's mind as he looked up the flat brown plain of slow-moving water. Anyhow, I've seen the Mississippi, he thought happily to himself. That's Nick Adams, Hemingway's Nick Adams' first view of the Mississippi River.
You know, I don't remember the first time I saw the Mississippi River, but of course, as somebody from Iowa who now lives east of there.
We all of us out here think everybody in Iowa lives in the banks of the Mississippi.
Well, it is my sign that I'm almost home. There is a feeling crossing the Mississippi. But more importantly, I guess to me, in my memory, the Mississippi River is the first place that I ever saw an American bald eagle.
All right.
And I saw 50 of them in a day.
Wow. When was that?
On the shores of the Mississippi. Gosh, that's a great question. I think it was in about 1983 or 1984. I was fairly young then, but we went and went to Effigy Mounds in Iowa and walked along the banks of the Mississippi and watched the eagles. A beautiful, beautiful day, and not a sight that you'll easily forget.
Yeah, I think the eagles are still there. I think they've come back fairly strong.
Yes, all over the Midwest now.
Yeah, we even see them on the Great Lakes, the edges of the Great Lakes all the time now.
Absolutely. Do you remember the first time you saw the Mississippi, Keith?
I do, Charity. I'm not even sure I want to tell you. Like all little boys, I was 7 or 8, and like all little boys, all I wanted to do was spit in it. And I did.
It's Storylines Midwest. For more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website at storylines.ala.org, or you can check out your local public library, and we hope that you do. Participating libraries have copies of the books, program schedules, and discussion guides if you want to start a Storylines book club.
Storylines Midwest is produced by Tamar Charney. Our engineer is Bob Skahn.
We had production help from Rebecca Williams, Mark Brush, Lester Graham, Amanda McWhorter, and Allison Zatorski.
Excerpts from The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn were performed by Doug Brown.
The executive producer of Storylines America Project is Paul Zalis.
Storylines Midwest comes to you from the studios of Michigan Radio at the University of Michigan.
Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
In 1856, a Kentucky slave gathered her children and ran north to Ohio. When they were discovered, she did the only thing within her power to save her children from slavery. In her desperation, she killed her daughter.
Toni Morrison's Beloved and the Underground Railroad, next time on Storylines Midwest.